the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into this Sunday divisional round edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Alongside the three-time Super Bowl winning executive and strategist Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni with you. And yesterday, both of the top seeds got it done, albeit in very different ways. And your girl can breathe a sigh of relief that the 49ers escaped, Michael. My goodness, that was a sweat.
Yeah, that was a big-time sweat and barely escaped. I mean, it was the kind of game we thought it would be. We thought both teams would move the football. I actually thought the scoring would be over the 50.5, and had a field goal been made here and there, it would have been. Disappointed with the Packers' last drive. I mean, Love has thrown that ball across his body so many times in the last few weeks, and I'm not sure who he's throwing that one to. I'm not sure why he just didn't take off and run. But look, I mean, the Niners were tested completely, and they were tested by a really good passing offense and a really good offensive line, which we talked about yesterday. We've talked, you and I, about it all week. Their ability to pass protect, their ability for Love to make plays, and, you know, there's never going to be an easy game. Right. Like, they're not playing an easy games when you get there. And I wrote this on Friday. The Packers were not a real true seven seed the way they were playing. You know, the Panther game was meaningless. The Giant game proved to be meaningless. They're a good team. They played better defensively as the year went on. And look, the Niners had a stretch, everything they could to win the game. And Purdy's inability to really control the football in the rain, I think, is something we have to keep in mind down the road.
Yeah, and I told you going into this game that this was an opponent that scared me for San Francisco, sure. Rightfully so, the way that they were peaking the back end of the year. And for a guy in Jordan Love who had 21 touchdowns and one pick the previous nine games coming into this one, for Dre Greenlaw to pick him off twice ended up being so significant. And of course, that one play that sealed it late, where I was screaming at the television screen, get down, we don't need a pick six, Dre, just get down, game over. Let's move on. But to your point about Brock Purdy, he tried the glove didn't work. He was in his head about the weather all day long. For a guy who we talk about so much as being so poised and accurate and ability to place the ball exactly where his receivers need it, he was off target so much. And I feel like so much of that was just mental because of the weather, and he's had issues with it in the past. But don't worry, Michael. I looked ahead to the weather this coming Sunday for the NFC Championship. Looks like sunshine and rainbows. We should be good.
Yeah, and I also think, too, that give the Packers some credit here. It's just not the rain, right? They had a lot of pressure on him. He was getting bumped around a little bit, you know? He made some really good throws, and if you want to continue to knock the guy, continue to knock him, but he made a couple great throws. The one over the middle was outstanding, you know, when he was able, under pressure, losing Debo with the one to Jennings over the middle, that was outstanding. Losing Debo hurt them, and, you know, Kittle has a big drop when they don't need it, so I thought he was under some pressure. It was just more than a wet football, right? You know, the throw to McLeod, I mean, McLeod's not really played a lot, right? So he's in there, and, you know, I don't think he ran the right route, or I think he expected something else. There wasn't perfect harmony. Look, he didn't play well. I'm not defending him. He played well enough to win. He didn't play like we're used to seeing him play, but I actually think this challenge that Green Bay presented will be the hardest challenge that the 49ers will face up until they get to the Super Bowl. And then I'm not sure any team that gets there from the AFC will present as much of a challenge that we saw here. Baltimore will, I think. That would be the only team, because the way Love was throwing the ball, the way these receivers were getting open, and that offensive line really can pass protect. Like, when you were watching that game early against Baltimore, and I think it has some meaning here, Baltimore's offensive line was struggling to block the front of the Texans, no question. And Lamar was under constant pressure based on the blitzing. Whereas Green Bay handled it. I mean, Bosa was on an island quite a bit, and they were blocking him. I mean, Chase Young was on an island quite a bit, and they were blocking him. We didn't even hear Hargrave's name. I mean, that Packer offensive line can pass protect. And when you look at it, the 49ers registered no sacks, right? They only had six quarterback hits the entire game. The entire game. And I would say the interceptions were not a result of the rush. And so when the Niners defensive front can't control the game, which they didn't, then you're prone to being able to be beaten.
They struggled to get home. And that was something that for me as a fan was frustrating. And then also knowing on the back end that you have a complete liability in Embry Thomas. Like, the Green Bay and Jordan Love knew, just throw it in 20's direction and we're going to get a PI call. He's going to do something stupid. He's going to miss. He's not going to complete a tackle. Like, it was another reason of many that I was screaming at the television throughout the course of the game, Michael. But again, San Francisco does end up winning this one 24-21. They do not cover the big number. Yes, let's spin it forward.
Spin it forward. Are you going to downgrade their power ranking in your mind? No. I think this was a really hard matchup. I don't know why I was. I kind of thought the game went the way it was. I thought the Niners would take it over later and kind of make it hard for them to catch up. I was actually disappointed that the Niners weren't able to move the ball as effectively. If you would have said to me the Niners were going to punt, we're going to punt four times in the game, I would have said no chance.
Yeah.
No way. I would have said no way. But they did, you know, and they missed a field goal. You know, they punted in the fourth quarter. Look, the biggest series of the game was that missed field goal. I mean, let's be clear. He makes that field goal. The over's going to hit.
Yeah.
And we're going to probably go to overtime.
Yeah, we were talking about it before the game started, though. When I heard that report from Ton Rinaldi talking about Anders Carlson and that every time he goes out to kick, Matt LaFleur puts his hands in his face and just prays. Like, that's not what you want to hear about your kicker. But yeah, that ended up being a huge moment from a betting standpoint and for Green Bay in this game, Michael.
Most of the time, except for the Dallas kicker, you know, most of the time these young kickers have to go through this, right? You know, and his brother went through it in Minnesota and they cut him. They got impatient and cut him. And now the Raiders have a Pro Bowl kicker. You know, and so, yes, it's difficult. The weather was difficult, too. That was challenging. And same thing with Moody. I mean, he gets a kick blocked. These are two of the best young kickers in football. Mm-hmm. But there's a growing strategy, and unfortunately, you don't want them to cost you the game. I'm not saying that Carlson cost them the game here. I'm not, right? You know, they had plenty of time. They had three timeouts. I think LaFleur should have called timeout after the first down run. It would have saved them 40 seconds, and then McCaffrey scored on the next play. I think he should, and he still would have had two timeouts. Because remember, when you're running a two-minute drill, you can stop the clock. Like, you don't need timeouts to stop the clock. And so when you don't use a timeout, when you let 50 seconds come off the clock like he did, or relative, then it's a real mistake. You know, because you're giving up every 6 seconds, that's a play. That's a play. That's a play. That's a play. And that becomes really hard. I felt like he needed to call a timeout at that point, and he just kind of let it go. Now, he still had 107 to go in the game, and he had timeouts. But to me, you know, there's a sense of urgency that's created. And all he needed to do was get in field goal range to at least get it to overtime. But, you know, look, one of the things you think you know you have to be able to do in playoff is when you have an opportunity to close the game out like they did with the long run that they made by Aaron Jones. And they got the ball down there in field goal range. You know, they just couldn't put the game away at that point. And that's why San Francisco is such a good team.
Well, and I think a big difference in the game, too, was, Michael, you look at this Packers team that a week ago was 4-for-4 in the red zone scoring touchdowns, and they start this game 0-for-3, have to settle for field goals. Of the 6 times that they were in 49ers territory in the red zone with an opportunity to score, they were only able to score 2 touchdowns of those 6 drives. Yeah. And so that ended up being huge. And for as much as I had an issue with a lot of things for the 49ers defense yesterday, they stood tall when they needed to in a number of those instances. And, you know, I was nervous coming into the game about Green Bay getting the ball first, driving down the field and scoring and playing from ahead. Despite them playing with a lead for the bulk of this game, San Francisco does enough to close this thing out. And they put the trend that has haunted me all week that you had been saying from day one about their fourth quarter struggles when trailing by 5 points or more. They were 0-30. They are 1-30 now. So they were able to overcome some of those fourth quarter demons when trailing. And it was necessary. And to your point about this being the most difficult challenge for San Francisco potentially in the postseason, I think because of that, how you say push it forward, whoever they play next, this was a wake-up call for them. This was a really hard-fought game. And that I don't care what the spread is next week, I'm probably going to be betting San Francisco because I think that they'll dominate.
I think they will too. And I think we saw on Saturday, we saw the number one seed start slow. I mean, that's just kind of what it is. There's a lot of time off between games. And, you know, it started slow. And that once they got momentum. Now, I think in the Baltimore case, the slow start was due to the unexpected amount of pressure that DeMeco Ryans decided defensively that he was going to instill upon the Raven offense. I don't think anybody anticipated, me included, that he was going to play a man-to-man game and he was going to blitz 69% of the time. So I think ultimately once Todd Monken decided at halftime, okay, change strategy, rhythm throws, three-step, you know, we're going to get to our short passing game, get the ball out quick. And then DeMeco didn't have an adjustment to that adjustment. And then all of a sudden the Ravens took the game over. So I think slow starts are here. I was very disappointed that the 49ers weren't able to kind of get their game going. They didn't get the big play that they needed in the passing game, which is something they typically always do.
Yeah, and we'll see if they're able to do that moving forward in the NFC Championship game coming up next Sunday. They will play the winner of the Bucs and Lions coming up later on today. But because you mentioned the Ravens, when we come back from this break, we'll dive into that Ravens-Texans matchup a little bit more. Being tied 10-10 at halftime, Baltimore ends up turning the page, turns into a dominant team in the second half to win 34-10. And you said it, the Texans hadn't blitzed much this season, but in that first half, I really thought that they were making it a game and that maybe Houston might be putting the Ravens on upset watch in the second half. And obviously that's not what happened. The Ravens now the second shortest shot remaining to win the Super Bowl behind San Francisco. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. And yes, have no fear, ladies and gentlemen. There will be an SGT that is given out on the program today. And you can find it later on the picks page, along with all of our picks from our hosts and guests. Plus, if you use the Lombardi Line's promo code Lombardi, you'll get 10% off an annual subscription. For more VSiN Pro picks, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. VSiN.com/subscribe is where you can do so. Welcome back into the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonn and Tony with you. And just to wrap up a couple more thoughts real quickly on San Francisco's win over Green Bay yesterday. Of course, a big talking point was the fact that Deebo Samuel was injured early in that game. There was some fear, and potentially still is, that he might have had another hairline fracture to that shoulder. We know he injured it earlier this season and it held him out for a couple of games. But at least from what I'm seeing, Michael, in early reports, there's optimism that he'll be available next week, which is very, very good for this 49ers team.
Yeah, they need him. I mean, they really need him. Now, Ayuk, I thought, was sensational. Made some really tough catches in the rain. You know, McCaffrey was great with the long run, the touchdown run. You know, he looks like his quad or something was tightening up on him, his hamstring, I'm not sure. But he kind of worked his way through it. Look, I think when you're Kyle Shanahan, you're sitting down watching this game, you're kind of worried about, you know, we got to get better offensive line play, especially pressure inside. I mean, we saw that. Purdy with Clark coming inside, Wyatt, those guys inside created a problem on the guards of the 49ers. And I think moving forward, you're going to have to handle that. If it's Detroit coming to San Francisco, the Detroit strength is their defensive front and their tackles. Hutchinson on the edge and those two tackles, McNeil moving inside, that they can power guards back. And Purdy needs a clean pocket. Yeah. He's no different than Tua. He's an undersized quarterback who needs to be able to step up into a lane to throw.
And we will preview that NFC Championship game either against the Lions or Bucks. We'll preview that divisional round game, at length today and get you set for that. As far as the 49ers right now, they are the favorite still to win the Super Bowl at plus 145. You could have gotten as high as 5-1 in game yesterday, though, when they were trailing Green Bay. The Baltimore Ravens, the second shortest shot at 2-1. And for Lamar Jackson, after a slow start in this game, you talked about it before the break. The Texans were blitzing, making him uncomfortable. He was taking a couple of big sacks. Boy, did they turn things around in the second half. They win 34-10 and advance also as a one seed to the AFC title.
Yeah, I thought this was a strategic struggle. You know, one of the things I think was the problem going in, and we talked about it, was the first game of the year, is this Texans defensive front gave the offensive line of the Ravens a lot of trouble. And it was a problem for Lamar. And then with D'Amico Ryans deciding I'm going to blitz, I'm going to put more pressure on him, right? That became an issue too, because it was hard. He didn't have a, you know, they're trying to throw down the field routes against this pressure, and Lamar didn't have time to really make the throws, and he had to try to buy time. And give Mike Sommets credit, you know, he took the rushing total over on Lamar. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that because I felt it would be a zone game. It turned out not to be a zone game. It turned to be a man-to-man game. Sommets must have known something going on in that game planning room down in Houston, because that proved to be correct. And that allowed Lamar to run the football. But the key to the game, we said it early and we said it all week long, was Baltimore had to take away the explosive play. And they did. I mean, the longest play of the day was 29 yards. They had a, you know, every drive had to be put together perfect plays, and they put a lot of pressure on Stroud because there is no run game. You know, mm-hmm. Singletary's 9 carries for 22 yards. You know, they had 14 rushes the entire day, and that's a close game. It's 10-10 at the half. You have 14 rushes, you're putting so much pressure on your quarterback. He's got 33 attempts for a 175. And really, the game at halftime, if it's not for the punt return, it's a 10-3 game. And at the end of the day, it's really a 31-3 game. I mean, they dominated this team. They weathered the storm strategically. They made the great adjustments, which they had to do. They had a really good game plan for the Texans. And then, of course, the penalties by the Texans, the false starts, all those mm-hmm. things playing on the road for a young team creeped up and got them. And let's face it, the Texans are no different than any of these other Kyle Shanahan style of offensive teams. When they get behind, and they're behind by 14 points going into the second half or third quarter going into the fourth, they have no drop back pass game. They don't. They can't drop back pass, and there's just no way they're going to be able to recover, and it puts way too much pressure on the quarterback.
Both matchups against the Ravens, Houston failed to score an offensive touchdown. And we credit Mike Sommets for the take that he had on Lamar rushing the football, which, again, 100 yards for him on the ground and those two big scores. But Will Hill came on the program as well, and he liked the Texans team total under 16.5. And I was like, I don't know if I can get there. CJ Stroud, everything that offense has been doing. And then lo and behold, held to just 10 first half points and shut out in the second half. So want to make sure we give another shout out for a good win here on the Lombardi line.
And I mean, really, they scored 3 points. I mean, he was right by all margin, and they typically average 19 points on the road. We knew they struggle more on the road. But in that first half, you were sitting there saying to yourself, wait a minute, is Indianapolis better than we think they are? Because Indianapolis was a bad couple of minutes away from being the team that won the South, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're sitting there saying, wait a minute. And then eventually, you know, like all these games, eventually the better team wears you down and wins. I think, to me, watching that 49er game, I think the weather was a great equalizer in the game. I think that really helped Green Bay. It helped Green Bay's defense for sure. I think San Francisco was the better team, and we're getting the better team. But let's be clear, the Packers are not really a 7 seed the way they were playing and the way Love was playing offensively and the way their offensive line can pass protect. Whereas I really believe Houston was probably not quite a 4 seed. They won the South, but what we saw was a team that's young. It's still not quite where it needs to go. It's got a great future with this quarterback. He's tremendous. If they lose Bobby Slovic and they have to change offenses, that's when you start to worry a little bit about where they can go, because he's been very good in that system. Look, 6 turnovers on the road all year in 9 games. You know, he takes care of the football, which is the critical component. He didn't force anything yesterday.
And both of these teams, to your point, totally deserve a lot of credit, because you look at this Houston team that won 3 games a year ago. The Texans won as many games this year, including the playoffs, as the previous 3 seasons combined. Even though we in the preseason said, hey, this is a team that can be better than maybe people expect, I don't think anybody expected them to be a team that was playing in the divisional round. And with Green Bay as well, Jordan Love stepping in there, the youngest team in the National Football League this season, for them to make it to this point, I mean, kudos for two young teams that are certainly going to be on the rise here and a threat for, you would hope, years to come. But okay, with this AFC side of things, Michael, who between the Bills and Chiefs, who are going to be playing later today, which, by the way, we are seeing a 3 once again at DraftKings right now, who would present the biggest test to Baltimore?
I think Buffalo, just because of Allen, you know, his ability to make plays. But this Baltimore defense is really good. They have great scheme. They can create some issues. Look, Kansas City, you know, with Mahomes is tremendous. But I think Baltimore matches up to Kansas City. That Pacheco, Andy won't run it enough to really create a problem, whereas Buffalo's run ratio has really improved. And Baltimore will move the football, I think. To me, Baltimore will move the football on Buffalo. Will they move it on Kansas City? Yeah, because if Kansas City gets into a man-to-man game, it really favors Baltimore, because there's going to be some receiver they can't cover, whether it's Beckham, whether it's Likely, whether it's Andrews, who will be back, whether it's, you know, Bateman, whether it's Aguilar. They're going to have a hard matchup. And the way they blitz and all that, you're going to sit there and say, well, they blitzed. Houston blitzed. Yeah, Houston blitzed. But I think it was more of a, wait a minute, we're not ready for this yet. Wait a minute, we didn't practice any of this stuff here. We weren't ready for all these overload pressures and five-man dogs and all that stuff. So now let's adjust it, and let's get back to our rhythm, three-stop passing game, and all of a sudden Lamar's good. When you're going into Kansas City, you're going to expect Spagnuolo's going to blitz you, so that's going to be the issue. I think Baltimore, Buffalo, the way they play would give Baltimore a little trouble. I think Baltimore's the best team in the AFC. Yeah. I think they proved that yesterday. I think they're going to continue to prove that. They're connected. I do think this is the year of the Harbaugh.
Yeah, and I gave you those odds a little bit earlier with San Francisco still being the favorite, and I don't know how much of that has to do with liability as well as them being one of the top teams in the NFL right now, but after watching those games and after watching both of those teams down the stretch, like in my mind, Baltimore should be the favorite right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Baltimore and all this nonsense. Remember we talked about yesterday, we talked on the show about analytics and how back analytics doesn't apply to the current day. And I think that was pretty true. You know, people were trying to make the case. See, Lamar's not good. Lamar, I got a text from a buddy of mine who said, oh, I shouldn't have bet Lamar in the playoffs. I should know better. Now it's 31-10. You win the cover easily, right? I think it was more of an adjustment game than it was Lamar not playing good. And I think Lamar in this passing game, it's a different offense in Baltimore. It's no, if that would have been the Roman offense yesterday and they had would have been struggling to run the football, you know, Houston might have beaten them. Houston might have beaten them. So I think at the end of the day, because they have diversity in their passing game and because Lamar can throw it, they were able to do it. I mean, the guy's 16 for 22. He only threw 6 incomplete passes. Yep. I don't know, you know, what more? Can we stop the talk about he can't play well in the playoffs? Can we stop that? Well, Houston's not a good team. Okay. Well, keep coming up with it.
No, it truly is remarkable how quick people are to jump on someone's struggles. Like Lamar Jackson struggles in the first half. Oh, yeah, that's the MVP. Okay, why don't you watch the second half, buddy, and see what happens. Baltimore again, 2-1 to win the Super Bowl. Second shortest shot on the board. We'll be right back getting into the two divisional round games coming up today. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with our free VSiN daily newsletter. Today's newsletter, no surprise, best bets with a heavy focus on today's divisional round games. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox, absolutely free every single day. VSiN.com/newsletter is where you can subscribe. And we're going to get into those divisional round games now here on the Lombardi Line, starting with probably what we assume is going to be the game of the weekend. And that's after we had a very closely contested fun one last night with the Packers and 49ers, but Chiefs taking on the Buffalo Bills for the first time in Patrick Mahomes' tenure on the road in Buffalo. We are seeing the Bills now a 3-point home favorite, total at 45.5, Michael, and the weather we assume is going to be cold again, but we also just saw both of these teams have success in frigid temps last week.
Right. And both teams, you know, didn't alter their offense, right? They threw the football. They tried to throw the ball. The Kansas City game was brutally cold. They had no interest in not throwing it, right? And in the Steeler game, the Bills were really good. No turnovers, were able to throw the ball, make plays. They ran it really well. Mahomes is 8-1-1 as a dog in his career, right? Mm-hmm. The line has been at 3. And when it gets to 3, as Mike Palm said on Thursday, it goes right back to 2.5. Now, DraftKings New Jersey has it at 2.5. For me, this is going to be, we know that Bernard isn't going to play, the inside linebacker. So now they're Milano, Bernard, they're two guys that start the season, mainstay of the defense, right, are not going to play. The green dot player probably will be A.J. Klein, who was with the Bills before, kind of has bounced around. He knows the system. He's not going to be able to play as well as he's going to need to play. The challenge is going to be for Buffalo. I assume Rasul Douglas is going to play, is the challenge for Buffalo is going to be is, can they get pressure? See, I think all this talk about Mahomes on the road is ridiculous. It has nothing to do with Mahomes. Mahomes is going to play good. The problem it could be, Stormy, is this offensive line of the Chiefs, I would not say is an elite offensive line. Okay. This offensive line of the Chiefs has struggled. We've seen it at home. We've watched them play at home with their tackle situation, with Taylor, you know, not playing particularly well. Donovan Smith, you know, struggling. We got him in the backfield half the time. Taylor lines up like he's a wing on a punt protection team. So, you know, that's going to be the key to the game. Can this offensive line protect on the road with crowd noise? We saw Houston struggle with it. I think that's the essence of the game. I think that's the essence of the game. I do not think Mahomes is going to break down, but I do think this offensive line is going to get tested inside. Trey Smith, Tooney, Humphrey, those guys are going to get tested. And if they can't protect, you know, if they can't protect, then it's going to be a problem. We saw Cincinnati go in there last year and really dominate the front with backup offensive linemen. On the road, right? We saw it on the road last year. Can it be done? I think so. And then if they get into this blitz game, which Kansas City wants to do, you know, then all of a sudden you better make damn sure you can get Josh Allen on the ground. You better make damn sure you can get him on the ground because, you know, we saw this yesterday. If you're playing man and you don't tackle the guy, he takes off. It's 35 yards. The longest play the Baltimore Ravens had offensively yesterday was the run by Lamar Jackson.
To continue going through these injuries, if you want to put that graphic back up on the screen, for Buffalo, you mentioned a couple of those big names in Terrell Bernard being unavailable and likely getting Rasul Douglas back. Teron Johnson also, by the way, cleared concussion protocol. That'll be important for them on the back end defensively. Christian Benford also out. Taylor Rapp out for the second straight game. And offensively, no Gabe Davis, once again, who's dealing with a knee sprain. So maybe another opportunity where you can target a Dalton Kincaid or a Khalil Shakir, for example, for the Chiefs. No Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, although no love lost there with KT unavailable. So expect Rashee Rice again to get the bulk of those. And maybe this is a Travis Kelce day, somebody who has struggled to get in the end zone as of late. Michael, could Travis Kelce come alive if he and Patrick Mahomes are dialed in?
Right. And I think this is a Pacheco day, right? Like the first game, Pacheco didn't play. The first game, but they had Edwards-Helaire, you know, and his longest run of that day was 7 yards. So, you know, they're a better run team when Pacheco plays, and they're going to have to run the football. I mean, the last time they played them at home, they threw it 43 times. 43 times for 271 yards. So you're not going on the road and throwing it 43 times. I'm just telling you, that's a hard thing to do, as great as Mahomes is. So they're going to have to handle that. And Pacheco gives this offense some identity. And over the last couple of weeks, when he's been healthy, they've got toughness, they run, and it'll take some of the pressure off the offensive line. Last time they played, they did a great job on Josh Allen. He had 10 carries for 32 yards. If they come out of this game with 10 carries, 32 yards, Chiefs are going to win. The Chiefs will win. I mean, Diggs had 6 yards a catch. Like, they were not, like, this notion, it's a little bit like the same notion about the 49er defense, right? How great they are, and you can't move the ball. This Bill offense under Brady has improved tremendously. Well, you know, yeah, they've run the ball more, and they have been much better in the run game. But they haven't really been better in terms of throwing the football. The leading pass catcher in the last game was Cook. Remember, he caught the touchdown pass for 27 yards down the seam. They kind of got things going. I think this is two defensive teams. I think the under is strongly in play here, Stormy. I think both teams will have a hard time really getting it going. Let me just check here real quick what the under over total is.
45.
It opened
half.
At 40. It opened at 48 and it's down to 45 and a half.
And I'm totally with you there from an under standpoint. And actually, Michael, my favorite way to bet this is, you know how much I love a teaser. What can we say? Yeah. It's who I am at this point. And I've been having a lot of success with them here in the playoffs. So we're going to keep it rolling today.
Absolutely. You know, so, pat yourself on the back.
So hear me
absolutely.
Out. Absolutely. So Chiefs, we tease that up, get them to, 8.5 points or so. So you get through the 3, through the 7. And then we'll tease the total up to 52 and take the under there. Because this is, to your point, I think this is an under game in general, but give yourself a little bit of that safety net. The Chiefs have been an ATM for unders throughout the course of the season, 13-5 to the under, including their last four straight, as well as five of their last six. And Buffalo, too, has been a heavier under team, 11-7 to the under this year. So I like that play. I think we have this mentality of it's Patrick Mahomes and it's Josh Allen. These are high-flying, explosive offensive teams, and this year has just been a different year for them.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're completely right on this one. I mean, this is a hard game, and it has nothing to do with weather this under. Is both teams, I feel like, are going to try to run the football a little bit. Mm-hmm. Buffalo, we know this. Their run numbers are going way up. They want to run the ball. I mean, they're a better run team now than they ever were at any point in the season. And so I think they're going to run the ball. And look, it's going to come down to, can Josh Allen protect the football? You know, I mean, he has had a hard time of not, you know, he's had 78 interceptions since 2018, the most in the NFL. Ooh. He's had 59 fumbles in the NFL, the most in the NFL, you know, so it just, to me, in playoffs, he's had four interceptions and two fumbles in the last nine games. He's got to protect the ball. He has to protect the ball. And that's going to be the key. And I just think the way they have been running the ball, it moves the clock. And mm-hmm. It moves the clock where the point total is a little lower. You know, last night, what were we at? We were at 24-21. That's a 45 game. Now, you know, to get – and that game could have easily got to 52, but it didn't. You know, missed field goal here. You know, a missed opportunity in the red zone there. What was – Green Bay was 2-for-5 in the red zone. There's why your under doesn't hit. Both teams are good red zone defenses.
Yep. And as far as it goes for this Chiefs-Bills game, credit Josh Allen, too, because in that first game in the playoffs, turnover-free football. And historically, as a postseason quarterback, his touchdown to interception ratio is like, I think, 20-something to just four interceptions. So been much better in that area. We will continue to preview this game, by the way, with Bills beat reporter Matt Parrino coming up next. But real quickly, last 2 minutes before we hit the break, Michael, initial thoughts for you on Tampa in Detroit taking on the Lions. We're seeing that number sitting 6 right now, but it's been as high as 7 and as low as 5.5.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is a game where it's going to be one-dimensional, right? They can't run the ball, especially on the road in Detroit with loud crowd. Camp is not a great run team to begin with. They're going to have to figure out a way to offset a lack of running game, a little bit like Houston was trying to do with the reverses, the bubbles, all those things. For me, when you go back and watch the first game, the front of the Lions really gave the Bucs offensive line trouble. They put Hutchinson inside. They rushed him off the guards. And we know this about Mayfield. If you get inside on him, if you get into the paint, he plays small. He's a small quarterback who plays small. And the Lions have got to really control the paint in this game. This game's all about the Lions' defense. Forget about their coverage. It's about getting in front of Mayfield, making him have to throw the ball over the wall. Hutchinson beating the right guard. Hutchinson inside. McNeil pushing the guards back. And they'll tip passes. The first game, the first interception was a tip pass at the line. And they intercepted the ball and they got 3 points off of it. So for me, that's the key to the game. I truly believe the Lions will have enough ability to handle the pressure and enough ability to make some plays down the field. And if Goff just plays within himself, I think it's a tough game for the Bucs.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel fairly confident that the Lions are going to win this game. I'm just still not sure what I want to do with the spread at this point, but maybe we can get somebody to help, you know, talk me through one way or the other before the show is up today. Total sitting 49.5. And one thing I do know for sure, or at least I feel fairly confident in, is that we're going to get some points on the board in this one. We're going to hit the break here real quickly. When we come back again, continuing to dive into that Bills-Chiefs matchup, Matt Parrino is at Highmark Stadium. Get the latest on the weather and the injury report. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL postseason, is bringing you an offer that'll help make the playoffs that much more electrifying. New customers can bet $5 on any game and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN only on DraftKings Sportsbook. Again, that code VSIN, V-S-I-N. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Joining us now live on the Lombardi Line, Bills beat reporter Matt Perino, host of Shout the Buffalo Bills podcast, coverage on News 4 Buffalo and Syracuse.com. He's out there at Highmark Stadium right now, where, based on the photos that we have seen, Matt, it appears the volunteer shovelers have done a better job today than they did against the Steelers last week. What can you tell us about the conditions out there?
Indeed. They had a little bit more time. They've been working for the last three or four nights, all hours of the night, all through different shifts. And as you can see kind of behind me here, they've done a really nice job on the upper deck, which is actually, from a safety perspective, where you want to have the best job, because we saw snowballs flying down from the 300 levels last week against the Steelers. And from a safety perspective, obviously, not a good idea.
So Matt, last week, I mean, it was brutal. People, you know, trying to get to the stadium, everything around Buffalo. Well, obviously, the Bills Mafia, will they be out in full force today to create a lot of crowd noise, which could create some problems for the Chiefs' offensive line?
Oh, without a doubt, Michael. I mean, this is a fan base since 2020 that's been just waiting for Patrick Mahomes to have to come into Highmark Stadium with fans. Because if you remember back in 2020, the last time Mahomes played here, it was during COVID, and there were no fans. So it's been like three or four in a row. Obviously, the playoff epic. To shift the scene here, listen, Bills fans travel well no matter what. But to have them here, and I was listening to your show earlier, and I think you made a really good point. It's like Patrick Mahomes is going to be Patrick Mahomes. But it comes down to the noise and the communication up front on the offensive line. We've seen it in the past on critical third downs, where teams have come in here and the noise has been so loud, they're not able to execute. And this is a game that it's going to come down to one possession, most likely. We've seen that history with these two teams. And I think the crowd is going to be a big factor today.
And this is the moment that I feel like Bills fans and Josh Allen and everybody has been waiting for, is to have the opportunity to host this team at home, like you referenced. So with that, when you look at some of the injuries that have started to pile up for Buffalo, getting some bodies back, though, what's your level of concern with the group that Buffalo is going to come out there with today?
You know, I think Taron Johnson, for me, was the biggest worry. And I say that while knowing that Terrell Bernard has been absolutely unreal for them in place of Tremaine Edmonds, who left via free agency in the offseason. You know, he's had more splash plays, sack, interceptions, fumble recoveries than Tremaine Edmonds had in his whole career. He's done it this season. So they lose something there. But Taron Johnson, in a lot of ways, is the quarterback of their defense. Micah Hyde came out after the game, or during the game last week, in the mic'd up segment. Went over to Taron Johnson before the game and said, this is your defense now. And so to have him back coming off that concussion, that's going to be massive, especially with Bernard out. But it's going to come down to this front. They get Rasul Douglas back in the secondary. He's been led their team in interceptions. They're probably going to need a takeaway or two today to win this game. Gabe Davis is out on the other side. They were without him last week. And it's interesting. You lose your number two target and somehow your offense becomes a little bit more fluid, because I think that, you know, Trent Sherfield, who's going to play for Davis, he doesn't need targets. You could spread some of the wealth around to Dalton Kincaid, the rookie tight end, and Khalil Shakir, who's playing really well in the slot. And they still have Dawson Knox, who had a touchdown last week.
So they ran for over 100 yards, 118 yards. They're 28 carries in the game. I mean, do you anticipate them trying to run? I mean, they have been a run team since Joe Brady's taken over. They really have kind of emphasized that. That's been why they're off. And today, with their defense missing some key starters, you almost feel like they got to keep the ball away from the Chiefs. So do you anticipate this to be a run-style game where we might see a little bit of a time of possession favor the Bills?
They're going to try to run it for sure. And I think this defense, that's the one area that I think you want to try to exploit them a little bit. I mean, I was looking at some of their DVOA and A numbers, and the only spot you could find a leaky area is in the run game. I think they're in the 20s there. And James Cook's been really good this season. I mean, he's more known to be a dual threat, but when they needed to use him on the ground against the Cowboys a couple of weeks ago, a team that also struggles to defend the run, he was really good. And know, he's not only going to factor into this game as a runner, though. I think they're going to try to use him in some different looks, move him around the formation a little bit. He's really good as a receiver. Now, he's had some drops, and I think that's one of the areas of concern in this offense and maybe why you might make an argument that they won't feature him in the passing game as much. But Josh Allen has reinforced that they have a lot of trust in him and faith in him. So I think this could be definitely a James Cook game.
You know, a lot of people have said that they feel like this is the year for Buffalo, and it looked rocky there for a minute midseason, but now closing out the year winning 7 of their last 8 games, an opportunity to host a playoff game here against Kansas City. Is it, if not now, when? Is that your feeling for Buffalo this year?
Without a doubt. I mean, it's all been building to this, and I don't think that there's been a better path. I don't want to say an easier path, but a more manageable path to the Super Bowl in the AFC than this season. I mean, this is a Kansas City Chiefs team that's only beaten one playoff team all year, and that's the Miami Dolphins. You know, the Bills, the only loss they have against the playoff teams, they've played a number of them, is that Eagles game a couple of weeks ago, and they probably should have won that one if not for that field goal. So this is a team that I've been surprised at how loose it's been in the locker room, how freely they've spoken. I mean, Deion Dawkins even saying earlier on Thursday that, you know, Patrick Mahomes is going to face something that he hasn't faced before, especially in this place. I mean, not all home stadiums are created the same. Arrowhead is an advantage. Highmark is an advantage. And we talked about that already. It's going to be one today. But also it comes down to the quarterback, right? Like Josh Allen, I think, has a few more ways to beat you if you take things away. I think they're going to use him. We talked about the running game. I think Josh Allen, the runner, is going to be used in this game as well.
Yeah, averaged 3.2 a carry in the last game. Really didn't get going. They did a good job in that game of controlling him there. Okay, so let's talk about the coaching matchup, right? McDermott was the defense coordinator for Andy Reid in Philadelphia. He fired him, went to Carolina, got his career. Now he's in Buffalo. Andy Reid's a hard coach to beat the second time a row. There's usually an adjustment. There's usually a different style. What do you think the Chiefs' style will be differently? Pacheco's back, right? So what concerns McDermott, the defensive coordinator, the most about this new version of the Chief offense?
Pacheco for sure. And that variable of the unknown and that he didn't play a few weeks ago, another different teams now than they were at that point. I think Kansas City's playing a lot better on offense. Rashee Rice has kind of come on, and he's now a priority when you're game planning against this team. Because listen, I know Travis Kelce hasn't been the same player this year, but he's still Travis Kelce. He still has that rapport, that chemistry with Patrick Mahomes. They're going to be able to get things going at any time. I'd count on that if I'm Sean McDermott. But with Pacheco, I go back to last week and how physical the Bills front was with Pittsburgh. Not a great offensive line, but a running game that had really come along, and they were just pounding teams. And the Bills met that physicality. I think you have to have that same mindset this week. You have to do the same thing against this team, because if Pacheco gets going and they can rely on that run game and keeps you off balance on defense, I think it takes away some of the creativity and some of the aggressiveness that Sean McDermott has kind of displayed as a play caller against the passing game. So I think Pacheco, to me, key to the game when the Bills don't have the ball, is making sure that Isaiah Pacheco doesn't leave his fingerprint on this game.
Matt, you're awesome. Thanks for making time for us on a game day. Have
fun. Thanks, Matt.
Take care, guys.
That's Matt Parrino again, does a great job covering the Bills. You can find his work at Syracuse.com, News for Buffalo, as well as the Shout Buffalo Bills podcast. And just as far as the numbers there, Pacheco's over under for his rushing yards sitting at 60.5. And we had the odds screen up there for the Super Bowl. Buffalo plus 550, the third shot on the odds board to win it all this year.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised to see that sunshine in the back. Weren't we supposed to get lake effect snow at some point? You know, so this will be good. I think this is going to be the true chess match, right? Because Reid is really hard to beat 2 times in a row. I mean, he kind of has a sense. He knows this defense really well. I mean, Reid understands the McDermott defense. So it's going to require a lot of adjustments by the Bills in the game. And without some of their best players, that worries you a little bit. That worries you that, you know, they're going to be able to make the checks, make the calls on the field, handle all the things that have to be handled, because Reed is very good at playing, at strategizing what he needs to do. The crowd's going to be really critical. They cannot, this is a Chief offense that can't be in first and 15. They're not explosive. We know this, right? They got to methodically work the ball down the field. And that's the concern you have if you're betting the Chiefs here.
No question. We've got a good one on our hands. And we told you that it's going to continue to tick back and forth. Every time there's a three, people are going to take it with Kansas City. When it's 2.5, they're laying it with Buffalo. And that's where we're back at the 2.5 right now. Total in that game, 45.5. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Resetting for hour two on the Lombardi Line and DraftKings Network. Continuing to preview the two big games coming up today in the divisional round and a recap of an awesome day yesterday. How about them Niners? Both top seeds moving on to their respective conference championships. We'll be right back.